And yeah, bookstores were the emotional heights for me as well, because I went to finally visit Fan Books in Taipei, which is like an idol for me for the past years. And I actually cried when I got there because I start talking about shit stuff in my life, because the owner was asking me that if whether or not that I can come and attend an event they were holding, but I said no, I can't because I'm going back the next day. So we're already starting having a conversation and forgot to press recording because we're always like this into our
And
conversation.
also,
We
yeah, and
forgot.
also because Helen and I haven't, well, we have seen each other since we both came back from different parts of the world on
Yes.
our big trips overseas.
Finally. We haven't been recording for about a month. So
Yeah, so this
welcome
is
back.
Jessie,
This is Helen.
and we're Asian bitches down under back in the big, grand old city of Sydney or Australia, however you want to say.
Yeah, so how should we start this episode? I've only got some notes that I prepare of what we would like to talk about of our trip in this episode.
Yeah. Well, I guess I want to this episode will be basically a chance for our listeners to hear our thoughts about our big trips overseas. So, I wasn't explicit about it when before I went, but basically I was overseas for about a month, a better part of a month with my partner for a trip around Europe. So we did five countries which I'll get into in detail later. And Helen was overseas for a little over 2 weeks
Weeks, yeah.
to our birth country, the best country in the world, no doubt, in Taiwan, obviously, and with her daughter, with her 10-year-old daughter. So we both had like really immensely life altering trips, and we just want to share with you guys, our top five moments, and give a little, I guess, shout out to things that people might not necessarily know about. I mean, I know personally there are so many things you can anticipate and try and find information for, right, before you go.
That's right.
Spend hours, days, months re just reading TripAdvisor or like Google reviews alone, but it is obviously something entirely different to be overseas yourself, and it'll be a light-hearted, hopefully, like also entertaining and informative episode where we talk about two very different places in the world.
Yeah,
You know, what
absolutely.
my super white, yours super not white.
Super Asian. Yeah, I think it's nice for us to both share our experiences in the sense that we get to talk about the things that we encountered during our trips that not necessarily that you can read on websites, you know,
Exactly.
for those people who are perhaps thinking or planning to go overseas. And you know, I actually want to share some of my traveling tips that
Oh, amazing. Yeah, because you.
I wasn't really aware of until that I planned this trip. It's a massive trip, you know, after 3 years being locked down in Australia. I mean, we've been traveling domestically during the pandemics, but this is my first major trip like after years, and with my and it's my daughter's first international trip as well, so it was so exciting for her. One
And
of
so bizarre.
yeah it's bizarre as well.
Well, compared to our upbringing, because we went to Taiwan every 2 years when we were growing up.
Oh, you guys did. I wasn't
Yeah.
really.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting Helen's the black sheep. Yeah. When I was growing up in Australia, my sister and my brother and I, the ones not including Helen, Helen's the eldest. She was off doing her own shit. We went back every 2 years consistently, and so I had like a constant tie to the country.
Yeah, and that was nice. And I didn't get to go back into like I was in my adulthood and you know start earning my own money and I get more freedom to choose where I want to go. Anyway, one of the tip I want to share with our listeners is that if you're going anywhere, I'm guessing that maybe some people already know is that this is what I'm going to do from now on whenever I'm going to take a big trip is having the packing bags, you know those
Ziploc bags.
yeah, no, not the Ziploc bags. Those compartments, fabric bags with zips on it that
Yeah.
you can stuff your clothes or socks in it. and it minimizes the space that you take
Right.
in the bigger suitcase,
Right.
is that you get to pack more things. But for me, for anyone who lives in the city that has Daiso, go to Daiso and get one of those laundry bags. Do you know the laundry bags where you put your delicate, like,
yeah, bra,
when
bra,
bras, or, you know,
yeah,
lacy underwears or whatever?
Yeah.
And
because we all wear lacy underwear. I don't. Can't be fucked.
In the I was going to say dishwasher.
Yeah.
Washing machine. What?
Yeah,
those ones. So Daiso sells the ones in all sorts of different shapes. And the one that I got is a rectangular ones. I don't have it in front of me now. But it's got a handle on it as well. You can zip it up. And those ones are used as a packaging bag to put it into your bigger suitcase. And they are so versatile. They come in so handy because when you go overseas, when at times that you will want to, you need to go and wash your clothes. You know, any trip that's over 5 days, you'll need to bring clothes that you don't want to bring, like 20 days of clothing. So I use those laundry bags to, as a, you know, space minimizer to, I can pack more stuff, but within the smaller space. And you can use those laundry bags to take into coin laundries to wash your dirty clothes. And you can put them back once they're clean. And they've got a carrier on the bag. It's so convenient. I think that's the one of the best thing that I had throughout my trip, because I'm such a bad packer. I don't know how to pack things, and it was.
I still don't. I don't either. Yeah.
I mean, my
and I don't.
You don't know how to
pack. Yeah. Well. Yeah. There's definitely a skill. Every time I go overseas, I always have to Google an advice list. Like what to bring to a trip to Europe for a month or something like that, because like there's always inevitably something I'll miss. And why not, you know? And by the way, when you were talking about your one piece of advice, I thought the whole time I was thinking this is such a mum thing. So just like talk about laundry or like how to pack or something. I was just like, oh my God.
Such a woman stuff. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I had like bags or something, but I don't want to talk any longer about laundry. Let's launch into our top five. For me, six. So Helen, you're also I've given you permission to add in one extra thing about your trip. Five top five favorite moments. I did want to preface this conversation by saying when we returned, I'm still jet lagged. I'm still struggling a little bit. I was really curious about how my friends were going to ask me about the trip, and I've seen several already in the last few days. And the most interesting question that was asked, as in first up, you know, the first question launched, usually people say, what was your favorite thing about the trip? I think it's like kind of like, that question has been asked by acquaintances, not like deep friends. Deep friends have time for me to unpack and, you know, go through things. But people who you're not really close to usually just say, what was your favorite thing about the trip? Because like they don't know what else to ask you. And it's direct. It's like, I can just pinpoint this one thing that they know I will be able to give them a, you know, answer about. And it's quick, you know. But my favorite question was from my friend Suha, shout out to Suha, who asked me, what was the emotional high of your trip? And then she asked, what were the emotional highs? So we went into a few more, but we exchanged, like, for me, my deepest friendships are the ones that are either sort of like intellectually extremely stimulating and curious. So, you know, my deepest friends are with people who are curious and also who are emotionally very, very intelligent. Emotional intelligence is the most underrated and under-acknowledged and misunderstood sort of skill that is not valorized in the way that intellectual or verbose intelligenceness valorized in the society. Will always have the issue of how this society overvalorizes people who are simply articulate and not necessarily have anything beyond that being articulate. I remember when I was in my, even a few years ago, I would be absolutely floored by people who are really articulate, especially women who are articulate. Mm-hmm. These days, I feel like if you speak well and you're a woman and you're articulate, and you're very good at, say, public speaking, that doesn't do it for me anymore. Like, kudos to you. I'm just saying that that seems to be such a corporate skill that is valorized by, I guess, the general public or the media. Yeah, you know,
skill that you need to have.
Yeah, it is, and it is a great skill. You know, it's just not the skill that I personally these days bow down my like. I will bow down for.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bow down for other skills such as like being extremely emotionally intelligent and being articulate about what exactly you're feeling and what you need, you know, emotional needs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, I will start with my first, and this is in no order, guys. So Helen and I will exchange. I wonder if we should just keep exchange one by one, or if we just should just go through all five of ours chronologically, like not chronologically, but like
we take turns,
or if we just do the top five ourselves so that we stay in the same kind of region of the world.
Yeah. Okay. How about you go?
Okay. I'll go first. Okay. So when I thought about this list, I thought what was the most like fun kind of top moments of my trip, and I have to say it was the discovery of the Moomins. One of the best moments of my...
stop talking about it.
I can. Okay, so guys, if you don't know, like me, I have never heard of the Moomins, okay?
Uh-huh.
And so when we were in London on our first few days, we were in the Apple Markets a few hours before we had to go to the British Museum. And I am really, the older I get, I think the more... plucky I get, maybe. I don't know. I just like cute things. I've always liked cute things. And we were in the Apple Markets, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have been there. A couple of stores, you know, cafes. Right opposite the Shake Shack, there is a little store that has that is colored like blue, and it has beautiful pictures outside, and it leads to a store upstairs.
Yeah.
And it was called the Moomins.
Yeah,
and I had never heard of them, never seen them, but I went upstairs, and the first thing I saw, okay, I think the only reason I went up was because like they had actually a Papa Moomin, like a real Papa Moomin person dressed up in the suit up outside, and like I didn't know how wild this was, right? I mean, if I knew about the Moomins, I would have like gone and hugged him, and like had a picture.
Yeah.
But anyway, I kind of just like, you know, said, yeah, whatever. This is a cute little big hippopotamus looking thing.
Yeah, for those who doesn't know, is it a Swedish?
It's a Finnish
cartoon or a graphic novel, wasn't it? It started with a graphic
novel. It was a children's book initially by Tove Jansson, who was a lesbian Finnish woman who wrote them decades and decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she's passed away. But they started off as children's books and became television series. And there's a huge, huge global following. People are like a cult following. People are obsessed. People have tattoos of the Moomins all over their bodies. People spend thousands of dollars on Moomin cups. It's a huge thing, okay? And I will go into detail if you don't know, and we will obviously provide a link. But basically, I went upstairs not knowing anything. And the first thing that the whole store was a Moomin merchandise place, basically a shop. But the first thing I noticed, Helen, when I turned in was like the plush toys, right?
Yeah.
I looked at the plush toys, a Moomin, Snork Maiden, you know, Little Moomin. There was basically like three types of plush toys. There was Moomin, you know, the little boy. And then there was Moomin Mama, but I didn't know it was Moomin Mama. It was just a Moomin with an apron. So I was like, okay, that's cute. Then there was Moomin with a top hat, which is obviously Moomin Papa.
Yeah, the dad.
And then there was Snork Maiden, who is the Moomin, not related to the Moomin family, but she has a tuft of hair, and she has like a ring, kind of a gold ring around her ankle.
Mm-hmm.
That is somehow how she distinguishes another gender.
Okay.
But I thought that was cute. But then the actual moment where I was like, I really am into this, is when I saw the face. They also had a plush toy of this human little girl. So yes. not a hippopotamus looking thing. And her face was just looked evil. It looked evil. It looked kind of snarky. It looked kind of like a mischievous little look. And I was completely in. The moment when I saw little Mai's face, So Little Mai is a character in the Moomins, and she is like a human girl who just somehow inserts her into the family, into the Moomin family. And when I saw Little Mai's face, I was just like, I really like this girl. She just reminded me of, I guess, maybe a little bit of your daughter, not in the evilness part, but just of like the mischief part, you know?
Yeah, the resting face sort of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a little, I like perversive little girls, or like just girls who don't follow rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And subversive, I should say, not perverse. Subversive. And we spent maybe like 15 minutes in there, and I wanted to buy everything. I wanted to buy everything, even though I had no idea who the Moomins were. I just purely loved how cute they looked. Okay.
Yeah.
So that day didn't get anything because we had to rush off. But I ended up going 2 days later on the morning of the day we left for Paris. Mm-hmm. I took a bus in the morning by myself back to the Moomin store.
Oh, did you?
And yeah. And 10 a.m. it opened, and I was there, and I spent over $200 on merchandise. And mind you, guys, I still had not at that point watched any Moomin. I just loved it purely based on how cute they are. Yeah. So, yeah. And then anyway, I texted you and you said that you had heard of the Moomins.
Yeah.
How did you come across the Moomins?
I call them comics, okay? They're the comic books that they were displayed next to Tintin's. The Adventure of Tintin when I was in high school, and obviously when I was when I didn't know any English at all, comic books were the first sort of publishing that you go for, because it's got pictures and you can read them anyway and spend some time not trying to look like a, you know, nerdy person because you're reading comics. So Moomin was the ones that were next to Tintin. But it wasn't as interesting as Tintin to me when I was growing up. I don't know why, but probably because I wasn't that into animals. You know, you think about animal comics, it's more like for younger
children. Yeah.
For like maybe.
I think you were just at the age where you had passed.
In a very awkward age.
Yeah. So, well, I think Moomin, yeah, what I've heard from the Moomin podcasts I listen to
is the podcast.
Oh yeah, there's so many podcasts about Moomins. One about the Moomins, which has an introduction by Lily Collins, you know, Emily in Paris. Mm-hmm. She's apparently one of the obsessive ones. She and her husband.
Okay. Cool.
And she's like people read them to their kids.
Yes.
So another favorite person of mine, Billy, I texted Billy and he had heard of the Moomins.
Yes.
I have never come across Moomins someone in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know, if you look up Google, the Google explanation for Moomins is that they are a family of white, round fairy tale characters with large snouts that make them resemble the hippopotamus. However, despite this resemblance, the Moomin family are trolls. The family live in their house in Moomin Valley and have many adventures with their various friends.
Yeah, so can I say, they're supposed to be trolls, but they look like hippos.
Hippos, yeah, yeah.
And they're so fucking cute. They're just the most adorable, beautiful, like Moomin Mama. Oh, just have you actually gone to YouTube and looked at those episodes?
No, I haven't, but I do remember vividly. This is a little while ago where I picked up a Moomin comic in the second hand bookstore.
Oh, really? Nice.
The first few pages were just so hilarious. It was a story about they going out and the Moomin mama was telling the dad, saying that, oh, you have to bring an umbrella because it's going to rain. And the Moomin papa, it's just so reflective of the real life. The Moomin papa was saying that, oh, don't tell me what to do, woman.
Yeah.
I know where it's gonna rain, so he didn't bring an umbrella. It ended up like raining when he was walking out. It was just so funny.
That is exactly what those people on the podcast say. So one of the episodes in the Moomin podcast, they interview Moomin fans, and they say like Moomin Papa is like everyone's dad. Yes. Moomin Mama is like everyone's mum. It is so universal, right?
Yeah,
and this is written by a lesbian woman in the 70s or the 60s. I don't actually have my timeline very, very correct, but it's so universal. But the reason why I love the Moomins initially, beyond the fact that they're so cute, many reasons, is I love situations where, like, it's not a nucleus family. And so, like, in the Moomin Valley family, in the Moomin family household, little Mai is there for absolutely no reason. We have no idea why she's there. She's part of the family. Like, Moomin Mama, like, includes her into everything. She lives there, basically. And we have,
throughout the story, there's no indication of what sort of relationship she is to the Moomin.
Exactly. Family. Yeah. Yeah. But she's
like a friend or house.
Yeah, exactly. But it doesn't matter. She's still, like, as important as, like, a daughter to Moomin Mama. Okay. And then there's, like, Snufkin, who is, like, this nomad friend who goes and camps, and he's kind of like a Chris McCandless in the sense that he has no home and he's always outside, and they go on journeys together. And then there's the kangaroo, whose name I don't remember. But he's just in, like, there's so many different characters who come in and out, and there's always space for them. And it's such a beautiful, like, the heart of Moomin philosophy is so deeply wholesome, and I think that's why so many people resonate with them. And if you haven't, jump onto YouTube where there's episodes of Moomin, not the latest kind of reiterations of them where there's like 3D versions, but the kind of ones made in the 90s or 80s, I believe. And they're very, very wholesome, and they're very cute. And actually, they remind, I've seen a few episodes now with my partner. They remind me of Xiaodingdang. They remind me of the cartoon.
Doraemon. Yeah.
Yeah, Doraemon, movies that we grew up with. Like, groups of friends who go on adventures, wholesome. They interact with each other as though they love each other as strongly as families love each other, you know? It's just and the first episode that you will see if you jump onto YouTube is just breaks my heart. Like, I sobbed actually when I watched the first episode because there's a moment where the Moomin Mama does something for her son that just is so indicative of a mother's love.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or just the pure kind of unconditional love that a mother gives to a child. It's there in the first episode. So, guys, if you haven't discovered the Moomins, that is one of my favorite things, the first of my top 5 moments of this trip.
Hi there. If you're new to our show, thanks for tuning in into our program, and we hope you will stay with us for a very long time. And if you're a regular listener, we're forever grateful for your continuous support throughout this period of uncertainty. It has really helped this podcast to gain a great exposure, as our mission is to center the perspectives of people who look like us, who are marginalized historically to the sideline of conversation. So if you haven't already, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast on Omni, Apple, Google, or Spotify, and leave a rating and review. And of course, as a small podcast program, we rely on listeners' support to continue this work. Please do check out our Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation in order for us to continue to advocate the intersectionality in the podcast industry.
I wonder why that we never really, the reason that we never really know much about Moomin is because we're all the way in Australia. We're not in Europe. And Australia has it's a culture drought.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, we get stuff from the US.
Yeah. But we're
very distant from. And we produce it's small, obviously, comparatively, but we do produce our own children's content. Yes. I grew up with Play School. I'd say that's the most Aussie kind of content when it comes to children. Children have a much wider spectrum of choices these days, obviously. Bluey. Yeah. What else is Aussie? Blinky Bill. I never got into Blinky Bill.
No, I think Blinky Bill was like for the generation before us.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, Play School is probably...
Play School, yeah, but Sesame Street, I'd say, is the biggest cultural.
Yeah.
Oh, the Wiggles, but we never got into the Wiggles. We were too old, when we came to Australia. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. What's next one?
Okay, so the next one is much simpler and not as specific. It is just simply Paris. I just wrote just Paris, just Paris itself. I think when you have a great experience with a place, when you go overseas, often what you look for are interactions with people, and somehow in Paris, everything just unfolded smoothly. We had beautiful interactions with people. People were nice. They were not what people had warned us about. You know, we always get the French people are rude. You know, we did not find that at all. Everyone was sweet and welcoming, and it may have helped that this is very, very elementary, but I did speak a couple of lines of French, which helped. And when I mean a couple of lines, I mean like greetings. And I've been to France with my mum, but last time we went 5 years ago, it was with a tour group. And so it was a different kind of vibe, mm-hmm. Even when we did have time by ourselves. But this time I did all the things that I couldn't do last time with mum. We went up to the top of the Eiffel Tower. We ate at really nice restaurants, went to a lot of different kind of places I wouldn't have thought about, the catacombs, for instance, which is kind of, catacombs is like a underground cave, I suppose, with thousands and thousands of bones and skulls. It's such a strange concept. I don't know why that is a tourist attraction. This whole trip made me reevaluate. I kept thinking about what the meaning of travel is, and why we travel and who travel is for. I had a lot of deep philosophical questions, but Paris, at the end of the day, was definitely my favorite city. If I had to go and live somewhere, we went to five cities all up.
Mm-hmm.
No, six or seven, actually. We stayed in five cities, and Paris was definitely my favorite. We had a very small hotel, but that didn't matter. We were in the fourth, very close to the Shakespeare and Co., which is all I cared about, the bookstore, obviously. And what I love most about Paris was, if you've never been to Paris, I'm sure a lot of you guys have. Helen, you haven't. But within Paris itself, there are so many cafes. And when I say cafe, it's not like the cafes we have here in Sydney. It's more like a restaurant with like 80% of their seating outside. And so you see people out kind of enjoying themselves and chatting to friends. They're like just people hanging outside, and the chairs are always faced outwards, and so you always feel
the road.
Yeah, so even when you're just walking down the road, any road in Paris, any street, you'll come across like several restaurants, and then just a bunch of people sitting outside chatting. So it feels so like you're being included into this just like open air kind of scene of a million people's different stories, and they're all chatting to each other, and it's all very kind of like lighthearted, and it was just really nice. I just like the vibe, general vibe of Paris. Yeah, that was my second top of this trip, Paris.
I guess you feel more deeply about this sort of social interaction after, you know, all the lockdowns during the
pandemic, yeah,
isn't it?
You
start to value the importance of the social interactions, even though if you're not being involved within that conversation, it's nice to see human interaction.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't enjoy the crowds, I have to say. Like the moment we landed in London, I just felt like, and we were staying in the center of London. Even after 2 days, I was like, big cities like London are for young people, honestly. And I'm not.
You arrived in London just before the coronation. So
yes. But even that, I mean, London is an extremely crowded city.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's got like millions and millions, so many more millions than we do here in Sydney. But every city we went to, Berlin, Rome, Paris, all these cities are like millions and millions of people. It's like a mega city. And it made me think, I'm not cut to live in a big city. I just, the noise and the density of kind of like chaoticness I'm just like, I was so over it. I was like, I don't like to live in a big city. Big cities are for young people.
Do you think you have changed? Because you lived in New York before as well.
Well, not for long.
Yeah, not for
they
long.
They weren't. Yeah, New York's intensity is very different to the intensity of European cities, I'd say. I could still happily live in New York for different reasons. But, I definitely, I mean, I'm like, I feel very, spiritually, I feel way older than I was even four years ago, you know, for a lot of different reasons. But yeah, Paris.
Nice. Okay.
So my third top moment was a city called Munster, and I have to. I'm going to say that this was one of my top moments and our top moments because we were staying with one of my partner's friends, and so like our relationship to the whole city was different. You know, on the get-go, it was going to be different because we had someone guiding us around.
Yeah,
Munster. So Munster, if you guys don't know, is a city, apparently Germany's most bike-friendly city, and it's near the border of Germany and Amsterdam. Netherlands. And it is a university town. I want to say it's like I want to compare it to regional towns, cities like Wollongong or Newcastle, but I can't. Only because it had such a different feel. It was much more built up than I'd say than Newcastle or Wollongong. It felt
built up more than Australia.
Yeah, exactly. It was very like I was really surprised because I didn't actually read much about the city beforehand. I just in my head was expecting a small town, like a little village, like a little suburban village with nothing going on. Completely the opposite. So much was going on. Extremely I was gonna say populated, but I just meant it was definitely a different vibe to the big cities we went to, but still like very busy, very very busy, heaps of people riding their bikes around. But the highlight for this moment that I wanted to talk about today is there's, you know, if you've been to Europe, you know there are churches every 2 meters.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, but the church I want to talk about is called Munster Cathedral or St. Paul's Dom.
So the
it's a Catholic church, a Catholic diocese. It's a church of the Catholic Diocese of Munster, and a dedicated sister St. Paul. And it's in the middle of the city. It was just basically we strolled to the Saturday morning markets, which is like any other markets you find here in Sydney. And it was like around 11:55, and we passed the church, and my partner stopped us and was like, "Oh, what time is it?" And it was like 12:05, and then he said that he had read the day before because we had visited the church the day before. He said, "Let's go in because there's supposedly a little show happening with the astronomical clock." So there's a like an astronomical clock that was built in the 1500s, 1540, around. So like 600 year old clock. It's like a clock with chimes and those, I don't really know how to describe it, but it's one of those ancient European things that you see in antique shops that where like little people come out, like little dolls and little figurines.
Similar to the one in QVB.
You know, yes, that's right. It's the one. Yep, exactly. Yep. That's
every
it.
Every hour it has like
a little show. Yeah. Think of like Pinocchio puppets like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Little figurines coming out. And so we went inside, we waited, and I told this story to my friend Suha last night, and I couldn't stop crying while I was saying it. So hopefully I don't cry while I reenact this moment. But we went in, and we sort of like, and the clock is up, kind of elevated towards the top of the ceiling, so like we all had to look up, right? Yeah. And I'll create the space. It was like us and maybe like 20-30 other people, and they were all kind of old white people.
Yeah.
Like old people, like people in their 70s or 80s, right?
Yeah.
And we were all looking up at this thing waiting for the clock to tick 12, and then when it did,
okay, I have it up on my screen now. Yeah,
it's beautiful. And when it did tick, a little figurine came out, and then the most sweetest kind of chimey tune started playing. And when the figurine came out, I just remember hearing a bunch of old people gasp in like wonder and delight. And like I lost it. Like I was glad that nobody was looking at me, but I started I had like tears running down my face, just because it was just so beautiful and moving to see old people react that way. And it was just so special, because like I think it was a combination of things. It was like the beauty of what I was seeing,
mm-hmm.
The reaction of old people, and knowing that even old people, like not even old people, but like the knowing that
they've lived so long, they still have that kind of
that childlike wonder. Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that this clock has been chiming for 600 years, mm-hmm. and that I just felt some sort of mystical spiritual connection with people who have just seen this show for like hundreds of years, like more than 500 years. I felt connected to something that was beyond me, and sharing that space and sharing that moment with these strangers around me, these old people. It was something I had never felt before. It felt like magic. And that all those things just made me cry. I just was like, oh, it was such a special moment.
That's what travelings are for, I think. Sometimes the traveling for yourself doesn't provoke a specific feeling, but it's what you see amongst other travelers that kind of brings out the interestingness of traveling. Like you see how other people react, which I'll talk about it a little bit later on my reflection of my trip with my daughter, is that a lot of times that you seeing something, a sight, and you feel like, oh, that's nothing, you know, like I've seen this before, or it doesn't make me feel anything different. But then when you see other people's reaction, it will make you start to think about why does it make them feel like that. And then perhaps you can start a conversation with that from then. And, you know, you telling us your experience of seeing other people, you know, specifically older people who still has that sort of innocence and seeing wonders throughout their eyes.
Yeah.
Makes sense? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was very special. So, you know, if you guys are over in Germany, go to Munster and go see this Munster astronomical clock.
Make sure that you have a bunch of seniors around you so you get the same
thing. Yeah, I wonder if it, yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a Saturday, it was crowded. I mean, the weather was perfect, so we got lucky.
Yeah, great. Okay.
So okay, three of my last really quickly ones. Veganism in Europe. Very easy. The main cities, I wanted to just say the shout out. We ate vegan almost every day, and it was super, it was very, very easy. For 99% of the time, we dined at really nice vegan restaurants. It was delightful, really, really delightful to find, you know, even if wherever we roamed in the city, we just Googled vegan near me on Google Maps, and there was something like 200 meters away. Oh, so, it was great. Yeah. Florence, we stayed in we went to Florence. Florence is number five, my second last point for the trip, of highlights. Florence's baptistry, also known as the Baptistry of St. John, is a huge building in the middle of Florence that knocked us out. We were, you know, walking along the streets, and then suddenly opens out to this huge, huge, impressively, absolutely gorgeous building. And yeah, that was, you know, if you're in Florence, you can't miss it. The Baptistry of St. John is one of the highlights. You cannot go past it. It is just extraordinary. The beauty of that city is staggering. And I will always just think, oh, you know, when we came back, it was really it was kind of, I wouldn't say heartbreaking or grief. I was going to say that, but it was just like so, it was so sad that in Australia we have the most, like in Europe, we have the most ancient, we have the most long-lasting culture, you know, the Indigenous culture. Mm-hmm. But we don't, like, none of us in everyday life acknowledge it or celebrate it, yeah, and tie it into our lives in the way that Europeans do. You know, they like, Europe has, we talk about Europe having an old culture. Hello, we have the oldest culture, and yet for fucked up reasons, obviously, this country doesn't celebrate them. And hopefully things will begin to slowly shift this year with the voice to parliament and referendum, obviously, you know. But yeah, just like we talk about how old Europe is, and it's just so sad that we don't pay the respect and love and honor that, you know, that First Nations, Indigenous and Torres Strait Island culture have, you know, in our everyday lives. So there is a grief there coming back. But yeah, Florence's Baptistry of St. John is my second last one. My final point before we hear Helen's top five, six, sorry, is obviously one of the actual thing that I was most looking forward to, which was A Little Life. Yay! In London.
I was waiting for you to talk about this.
Yeah, yeah, I can't. It's an extraordinary play. Very clever adaptation is all I had to say. After we watched it, I went online and read all the reviews there were on it, just to get a sense of what people were thinking. Nothing out of the world, that, you know, people had read said that I hadn't also thought. They just managed to articulate it much better than I could. But yeah, I just thought it was such an extraordinarily clever adaptation in the way that they were able to reshape and remold, re-sculpture this 750-page novel into a two-hour, 50-minute play on, you know, live on the stage. Clever in the way that they incorporated space and helped us contextualize what the different the spaces, like moving from the kitchen to Harold's study to the apartment in which they shared, to a hospital, to, you know, Jude's residence. You know, it's just so clever in the way that they shifted these moments without ever shifting the stage. The set design was very clever, very clever in the way that they used Harold. Harold, if you've read the book, who hasn't read the book, he's kind of like a character who comes in and out, right, of Jude's life, as in there are scenes with him and scenes without him. But in the play, what happens is he's often in the kitchen on the side. So there's like a little kitchenette that they set up on the stage on the side to the left, where during the play, it's 2 hours and 50 minutes. During the play, Harold, when he doesn't have any lines, he's off to the side making food. So you always feel his paternal, loving presence, right? But also, I don't know if you know, James, I forget his name actually, the guy who plays Jude, the lead guy, James something or other, he actually, I learned this on the line in the women's toilet, waiting for the women's toilet line, which I'll talk about later. The woman I was speaking to, she told me that he had diabetes, and so every half an hour he has to eat something. And so like that, they incorporated that really cleverly, because like Harold would be making like a meringue or something, and then they'll have a scene of celebration where he will come into the scene and with food, and then Jude will be eating on stage. Mm-hmm. It was so clever, and the highlight for me not was the actual play, but the last moment of the play, mm-hmm, where the moment where the lights went out after the almost 3 hours, I like lost it. I got really teary. When I say I lose it, I just mean like tears streaming down my face, mm-hmm, because I felt the weight of the emotional gut punch of what happens. You know, we all know, if you haven't read it.
Very soon, yeah.
Oh, wait, did I just spoil it for you?
No, don't spoil it for me, but I'm...
Oh, you didn't hear what I said? Okay, good.
I literally said.
I literally just spoiled it for you. Okay, I'm glad you didn't hear what I said. But I also what I said was not true. Or was it? Oh, yeah, no, I the whole chronology of the end is so spectacularly griefsome that I don't actually remember. I know the facts, but what I know for sure is the emotional weight of the end, and it is such a stunning end, the play. So if you are in London, or if you have, you know, $2,000 to spare to go to London to watch this, it is worth it. And I don't know how long it'll take for, you know, Australia to receive such beautiful art. I find it inevitable that America, especially New York,
will most likely.
Yeah, definitely be the next place it'll travel to. Yeah. But Sydney, I don't know.
I wonder why that it's the production started in London first, because it's a story.
Well, it started in Amsterdam. The first adaptation of it, it played in Amsterdam a few years ago.
Oh,
yeah, it was adapted by a Dutch guy alongside Hannah Yanagara. It played for a couple of, I think, a season or two, I think. Yeah. And then it moved to London. Yeah.
It's such a massive novel. When you told me that you're going to see the play, I'm like, oh my goodness, I didn't think that it was possible to adapt it into a theatre play. And because I've been putting on hold of reading this book for so long that I started, I've actually downloaded it from Audible and start listening to it. And I found that listening to it, it's just as good as reading it, because it's faster. Okay, definitely. It would take me shorter time to complete the whole book. And the person who narrates the story was just amazing. It was almost listening to a play, because it puts on voices.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic.
And it's really good. And yeah, I'm hoping to see. I don't know if I'm expecting it too much, but I do hope to see that you will come to Australia within the next 10 years or so. I was going to say 5 years, but I think 5 years, I don't think so.
Yeah, 10 years.
Because I would love to see this with my kids, my husband. And it's just so amazing how Hanya wrote and built up all these personalities and depicted the pains and the traumas of one character. And also, you know, the side characters as well. I start thinking about which character that I will relate to the most, which character I'm best friend with, which character that I want for the rest of my life. Because apart from A Little Life, because I read Tomorrow, Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Which is the best book ever.
Last month as well. I start thinking about, you know, the sort of friendship that I want to have in my life for the rest of my life. And for me personally, I'm so jealous of the characters that has friendships like Marx from Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
As a friend in The Little Life, and like those sort of genuine friendship is just hard to come by.
I know, yeah.
Oh, so amazing. And they're so beautifully. And
they're both
writers as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Pardon? They're both Asian writers?
Yeah, they're both,
did you say?
Asian and female writers. I haven't read enough of male writers' work, obviously. But I feel like the female writers, they did so well of writing the pains coming out from a male character. You know, from like Sam in Tomorrow, 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 and also in The Little Life.
As
if they live through their life.
Yeah. Well, Gabrielle Zevin said that her two main characters, Sadie and Sam, are composites of her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Obviously, yeah. Yeah. I will go to my deathbed just always screaming about how magical and wonderful Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow is. It is just the best book ever. I will always have so much enthusiasm for it. It absolutely killed me. It is the best book ever written, in my opinion. The more I think about it, the more and the loyalty with the friends that you talk about, these characters, is really what you want at the end of the day, right? It's the loyalty of a deep friendship that is the reason that we live. You know, it's not for our spouses. It's for the loyalty of friends.
It's a particular relationship, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay,
spend like an episode talking about the friendships in Tomorrow, Tomorrow, Tomorrow and The Little Life. Or spend like talking about it.
Yeah, I could spend an entire day talking about Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, it will be my turn to share some of my experiences in throughout my trip in Taiwan.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. Helen, your turn. I want to ask you before you started, what's the book that you took with you and what were you reading during your trip? Because this is something that means a lot to me. You know, the books that people take to big journeys, on big journeys.
Yes. Can I talk about it? Because it's your work. It's your new work. Would I be able to?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I took your manuscript of your next novel to read it with me, and I'm happy to say that I actually finished it during my trip, you know, on the high speed railway, on the trains, on the buses. I was reading your work. So your next novel, the manuscript, was one that I took with me, and also I was reading Tomorrow and then Tomorrow. So those are the two.
Wow. I'm so humbled by the fact that you had like the best book ever written while you were having my book as well.
Can I actually finish your book first? Because it was I do have to admit your book was smoother to read, and it was a shorter story, obviously. And
yeah, yeah.
I really want to get through it and talk to you about it when I come back. That's my main objective. Mm. And it was also because your next book involves stories that taken place in Taiwan as well, and I want to read it in Taiwan.
Oh, magical. I would love to do that myself.
I had it in my hand. Yeah, so those are the two books I had when I was in Taiwan.
Well, nice. Okay.
Okay, so
okay, go launch into it.
With my trip. So I packed three major cities for 15 days with my daughter, her first international trip, and she was so excited. And these are my top five, or maybe top six, memorable moments, or whatever that you want to call it. First one would be the Salmon Lake. Salmon Lake is one of those touristy places that a lot of Taiwanese said that, oh, it don't bother to go, it's full of tourists, it's so packed, it takes a long time to get into the lake because you have to travel through a mountain area. And actually, to me, for my own perception, it wasn't that long. It was only like an hour from Taichung, central city of Taiwan, by a bus. My highlight in Salmon Lake was the Airbnb, the host that we stay with. He was just so amazing about, I think there's the people that you meet throughout your...
It's the best, yeah.
Makes you remember the place better. The host, Ada, he's a traveler himself as well. He's such a genuine, down-to-earth, that sort of Taiwanese uncle personality. And he finds other people's story very interesting as well. He's always so eager to ask us about our lives in Australia. And he was asking for books for his kids as well. And also we went to stand up paddling at Salmon Lake. That's one of the things that my daughter really, really wanted to do. And we met this instructor. Her name is Juzi, which is Mandarin. Yeah, Juzi. And she was so genuine as well. She's a single mom with two kids. She was telling us that I think we end up doing a lot of talking rather than doing the stand-up paddling. My daughter ended up playing by herself, just swimming around the lake and stand-up paddling. And one thing that I couldn't stop telling everyone was that how strange it felt that when we booked the session for stand up paddling, we were assuming that we'll spend 2 hours just paddling
with. yeah
We spent at least an hour and a half being photographed by this instructor and
drone.
We actually had the drone taking photos for us.
But and videos.
Yeah, I was just so perplexed because she was telling us to pose like this, you know, have your hands out, hold each other, making a heart shape with your fingers. And then by the end of it, I was like, oh, is this something that's popular in Taiwan? And the instructor says, oh, yeah, because during pandemics, the Taiwanese people couldn't go overseas, so they started looking for activities that's within Taiwan, and with the, you know, online influencers, when wherever they go, they try to promote a place. And in Salmon Lake, where you can do all sorts of like water activities, this became really, really popular. And I think this is a very Asian culture as well. People like to take photos like literally every second.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you go. And then they incorporate this idea of taking photographs for their customers or clients, or however you want to call them, and then make into a package. So you eventually end up with, you know, you have 2 hours of renting the paddling board, and then the instructor takes you out in the middle of the lake, and then also the instructor takes the photos for you, so you don't have to bring your phone with you.
Right.
Yeah, so we end up getting like 300 photos and videos from her. And all like funny videos.
It was basically a photo shoot, a professional photo shoot.
It was basically a photo shoot, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I felt so awkward. My daughter was really natural at taking photos, but I was so awkward that I just
Helen, I've seen these pictures, ladies and gentlemen, and she was hilarious. It was fucking hilarious. I love those pictures, so yeah.
Yeah,
I would love to do that.
I was worried to fall into the water. I didn't want to get myself. I mean, I don't mind, but it's just I didn't want to jump into the water, whereas my daughter, she was just like, yeah, whatever, I can just swim in the lake.
Yeah.
It was just really funny. And the instructor was really nice. Yeah. She knows that, you know, she knows that we were from Australia. She was asking, everyone asked me, as, you know, as a parent, like, what's the school like in Australia? And they're like, oh, I really want to send my kids overseas, and, you know, things like that, because the instability in Taiwan.
Okay.
Also, you can take the ferry trips around the lake, and then you can go over to the other end of the lake to take the cable car, which crosses the valley. The cable car trip took like 15 minutes, a lot longer than the one that you can take in Taronga Zoo and the one in Blue Mountain. It's worth the trip to go over to the other side to take the cable car, because it was just so beautiful. You can see the lake from, you know, the bird's eye view. Yeah. Okay, so that was the first one that I love.
First highlight, yeah.
Okay, the next one is Herping Island, another outdoor place, nature preserved scenery that we went to. This place we went with a tour, which is north east of Taipei, about an hour away. Herping Island is a little island that is connected to the fishing harbour, Geelong.
Geelong, yeah.
Which you only have to cross through a bridge, is only like 50 metres. You can swim across if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
A channel that reaches Herping Island. This island has such an astounding, strange, abnormal, eccentric sort of rock formations. It's absolutely beautiful. The day that we went to was a very stormy, rainy and cold day. So my daughter kept saying that, oh, next time we come back to Taiwan, I really want to come back to this place, because they had an ocean pool as well, which they opened during summer. It's so beautiful. And
so was it not opened?
No, the ocean pool wasn't open. Yeah, it wasn't filled up yet, and because it was springtime when we went, so it wasn't open.
But you don't want to go to Taiwan in summer, because it's disgustingly hot.
Yeah, I know. I don't know that if my daughter will want to try to go during summer, because it would be like absolutely horrendously hot here. And the third place I really love, and also really want to recommend anyone who goes to Taiwan, who is planning to go to Taiwan, is Yilan, which is on the northeast coast, again, northeast coast of Taipei. Yeah. What happened was that I booked Yilan with a tour as well, but I got cancelled a day before because they didn't have enough people.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so I text my friend Stephanie and saying that, oh, are you free tomorrow? My tour was cancelled. We can hang around in Taipei if you like. And then she told me that, oh, okay, I can just hire a car and I'll drive you to Yilan if you want to, because you're all the way, you know, you come all the way from Australia.
Yeah.
Visit the place.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just thinking that, oh, it's just so troublesome for her because it's an hour drive to Yilan. She says, oh, no, it's okay. My daughter's doing bushwalk over there. And then she finishes tomorrow with the school. I can pick her up from Yilan as well. So the plan was set. Then she picked us up the next day. We got the hire car, drove to Yilan. And Yilan is one of those, it reminds me so much of where I live now. It's like a semi-rural area, but it's very convenient. Yilan has a lot of hot springs around. There's actually a public hot spring area. They call it Gongyuan. It's like a park, public park where you can go in and have your legs and feet soaking hot spring. And it's actually clean and free as well.
You're kidding.
Oh. The only thing is that you have to bring your own towel. And they have like taps, the cold water taps to wash your feet.
Right.
Get
sit
down beside the hot spring, and it was so relaxing, so nice. When we went, it was almost like 6:30, so there wasn't a lot of people, and it was just only a couple of cab drivers sitting on another pool next to us. So they have several pools designated around the park, and it was so nice. I was just thinking it would be such a nice time to go during the winter. There's a little cafe nearby as well where you can get tea and coffee. Yeah. So it's all free.
Oh,
yeah.
Sounds like a dream.
Free foot soaking hot spring in Australia.
It's like $180 for like half an hour here in Australia.
Yeah. Okay. So Yilan, I really, really recommend and love that place. I always go to Yilan when I go back to Taiwan. What's next? Okay, so there is a particular suburb I really want to recommend to everyone who goes to Taiwan. If you're only going to be spending time in Taipei, Da Dao Cheng and Di Hua Jie, they are the kind of like an old street in Taipei, but the infrastructure along that area is just so amazingly set up. You can walk through, there's a pedestrian areas that you walk through, and there's so many old stores and bookshops and dry food stores that you can just pass. And I don't know, you can take a lot of photos there. I it's so hard to explain Da Dao Cheng because it's almost that you've gone back in time. You feel like you're in like 60s Taiwan compared to all those metropolitan places in Taipei. And the people are so genuine. The people are just so nice. They would hand out, they would give out lollies. Would you like to try this? Would you like to try that? Free food. And apparently that during Lunar New Year, that's the place where you get all the, you know, ingredients for the Lunar New Year meal. And we came across for Da Dao Cheng, we were there for the first afternoon when we arrived Taipei because we had a free walking tour where two tour guides, it was an English tour, so they explained the history of Taipei Station, Taipei Post Office, Taipei Railway, and they were telling us the histories of a couple of temples along that area as well. But on the second last day before we came back to Australia, we went to Da Dao Cheng again because I really want to check out one of these qi pao store where you can dress up and take photos along the streets. And then we end up, my daughter ended up getting a dress there. She got a qi pao.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
It took us so long because she's so indecisive. I think we spent there like an hour for her to pick because it was just like thousands of dresses, you know, a lot of racks around the shop. And the lady in the store, she was so nice as well. She's letting her try different dresses, and she ended up getting like an adult version of qi pao rather than the kids version.
Okay.
Adult version one looks better. She didn't want she didn't want the cotton fabric one. She wanted the satin one.
Yeah.
So that was nice. Da Dao Cheng and Di Hua Jie. Okay, so that's my top four places that I would recommend for people who want to go to Taiwan. Other highlights, I'll say bookstores and museums It's just amazing. A lot of museums are free in Taiwan, or if they're not free, they're so much cheaper compared to Australia. Even the amusement park was so much cheaper. The convenience in Taiwan is just amazing. You can pretty much see 7-Eleven every block.
Food. Do they still have Family Mart?
They have Family Mart. Yeah, Family Mart is one of the major convenience stores in Taiwan as well. Yeah,
love that.
Food, so convenient as well. We end up getting a lot of Uber Eats days that we didn't just want to go out. Uber Eats in they deliver to the hotel. That was so convenient. Finally, I'll say, I think personally for me, the highlights of the whole trip will be spending time with my daughter. Like what you said about seeing the old people at the church. To her, everything was so cute for her. Everything was just, you see her expression, you're seeing things differently through the, you know, through kind of like a different lens of a child's eyes. So different, and you feel the excitement from her. You kind of get influenced by her excitement. I was just so impressed that my daughter, that even though that I know a lot of my friends and family say she's a child that is difficult to be with, but I was so impressed throughout the whole trip. She was very mature, and she was very helpful. Considerate, and
that's good.
My daughter, she was just so confident about her existence in Taiwan, I think.
Yeah.
I was a little bit worried, I think, for the fact that, because, you know, she has a, you can tell that she's not Asian.
Yeah.
She's very white. And I was worried that she's going to be stared at, and she's going to be feel uncomfortable, because she's always feel, you know, people staring at her. She'll get anxious, but in Taiwan, she was just very confident, and she's happy to speak Mandarin as well. Like, she's confident enough when she wants something, she'll ask me that, oh, how do you say this in Chinese? I told her she will be happily to go up to the, you know, the convenience store staff and say that, oh, can I exchange this $50?
How does she say that?
Oh, 我可以换这个, 10块钱吗? She would say that. Dollars into, you know, $10 coins. Yeah. You can do that. Gacha, you know that. Those vending machine.
Yeah.
Or otherwise, she would say that, oh, can I not have chili in my food? Or can.
Yeah.
So she would pretty much have the confidence to express herself.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful to hear.
So I think that she become a lot more became a lot more mature than I expected her to be throughout the trip. Yeah. So and obviously spending time with her was really nice. Yeah.
How lovely. That's such a lovely story.
Yeah. I was going to ask you two questions before we conclude this episode. And I'll probably answer these questions myself as well. So the first question was that, is there a place that you will particularly want to return to if you...
Paris,
okay.
That was so predictable, but I can't help it. Paris, yeah, I really want to go back.
Okay, and the next question, I didn't think that you... I don't know if you answered it. It was a question that Suha asked you. What was the emotional...
Was the emotional high for me? It was the monster clock. It was the astronomical clock. Okay. That was the emotional high for me.
Okay, nice.
And well, you?
For myself, I would say all the places that I've just mentioned, I really want to go back to them. But I think maybe Yilan, where I would love to go back to do a proper, you know, a week in Yilan, just hot spring. And a walk on the beach, Yilan will be probably the place I want to go back to. And Herping Island. And then my emotional height will be the people of Taiwan. And just hearing, especially when I hear...
Taiwanese. Tai.
Granny's talking Chinese to us.
Yeah, best language ever.
Yeah, I think that was the emotional height. And I've told you this before, but I just want to share this funny incident about Taiwan. When we the first day when we arrived in Taiwan, we took the high speed railway directly to Taichung, and because we had several hours before we can check in to our hotel, we dropped our bags off at the reception and we went out to walk around the streets of Taichung. This is 8:30 in the morning and there wasn't any shops open yet, so we were just browsing around the convenience store and walking on the street, and they came along. We were still wearing masks back then. Mm-hmm. And this old guy walked right in front of us and start talking in Taiwanese to us and ask, like, he was just so bluntly pointing at my daughter saying that, is she a foreigner?
Yeah, in Taiwanese.
Yeah. And I was kind of shocked, like someone just out of nowhere randomly asking this question. Mm-hmm. But it kind of prepared for me to have that kind of question for the next 2 weeks, that people would just come up to asking, is she a foreigner? Are you Taiwanese? You know?
Yeah.
It was just so funny that he asked us in Taiwanese, not Mandarin at all. It wasn't, obviously it couldn't be English, but he was just very randomly asking us, oh, is she Wakolama?
I miss it so much. I have so much grief.
And
over not being in Taiwan.
Feel like I was really included. Like I was.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they recognized me as a
Taiwanese. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was so nice. And I had old guys ask me directions in Taiwanese as well. And I had to tell him that, oh, I'm not from here.
Yeah.
So that was the highlight and emotional highs for us.
Yeah. And now we have the rest of our lives to look forward to. Well, I'm definitely planning a trip to Taiwan.
Yes.
In the next year, definitely. Definitely.
And also you were asking me that the things that I bought in Taiwan that I told you I got a lot of books. Yeah, I visited a lot of bookshops in Taiwan. And yeah, bookstores were the emotional heights for me as well, because I went to finally visit Fan Books in Taipei, which is like an idol for me for the past few years. And I actually cried when I got there because I start talking about shit stuff in my life, because the owner was asking me that if whether or not that I can come and attend an event they were holding, but I said, no, I can't because I'm going back the next day. And then she just gave me several free books. She was just telling me that, oh, it's so nice that you're doing this podcast in Australia as a Taiwanese, and it's so nice you're talking to me about feminist issues. So that was an emotional high for me. And finally, I don't know if I have told you, I bought this in the convenience store. This is actually a cushion of the cabbage that was supposed to be on display in the Palace New Zealand in Taiwan, but it was on display in the sales branch, which is down in Tainan, I believe. So we get to see the day cabbage. But the following day, I came across with this. Do you know how?
Can you hold it back so I can see the whole thing? Okay, and then turn it around. That's cute.
You can actually open it up, and it turns into a blanket.
You're kidding.
It turns into a blanket.
Oh my god!
It's the best thing I bought in
Taiwan. That is incredible.
You know, you can't just get this by itself. You have to buy like a huge bag of chips, the Lay's chips, because it was like a promotional product.
Did you only get one?
I only got one because that was the last pack in the 7-Eleven.
I would love that so much.
Yeah. So this is the best thing I got in Taiwan.
Like,
they so cute.
Do you want me to show you my favorite thing?
Yes, please.
I'll show you my favorite thing. Yeah, I'll go get it. Okay, so I actually got this for Mona in Rome, but I've decided to keep it myself because I'm so selfish.
Oh, the monkey.
I know, how cute.
What's the significance of a monkey in Rome?
Oh, nothing. It's just a doll. They had like tigers and other animals, but you know, I fucking love monkeys. That's my highlight. And also, I got this.
Ah, the Moomin. Yeah.
Yeah, Moomin. Oh, she's so cute. Yeah. So these are my.
Yeah.
why that we kind of regress back to our children's age that we would love cushions and toys.
Yeah, and what about Aya? Did she get any plush toys?
Oh yeah, she got my daughter got a massive Shiba Inu, the plush toys as well, and it's similar to this. It's a similar concept to this because you can open it up and it's got a blanket inside.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything is so cute and adorable in Taiwan.
I know. Yeah,
this is the best thing I got. I think I can't think of anything else apart from books.
Did you buy any clothes?
No, I didn't buy any clothes.
I also did not buy any clothes, and I'm like,
you didn't want to spend time to browse through stores.
Yeah, I know. It takes time.
I just thought that you can get clothes anyway. Yeah, so I'm not a very big shopping person, but yeah, I like to get things which came by fate. I think this
just came
by fate because I saw it at 7-Eleven, and the store the staff was telling me that, they're really popular. They were sold out in Taipei because I was in another city outside of Taipei.
Yeah.
They said, it's just sold out in Taipei. I don't know if it was a selling strategy or something, but it was the last pack on the shelf. I said, okay, I'll get it.
Yeah. And what were the chips that you had to buy?
Lay's. It's just,
what flavor?
Seaweed and then... there's some plain ones, nothing that you couldn't get in Australia, which was funny because when my husband saw I bought back chips, he's like, why the hell did you get chips in Taiwan? I said,
can we get seaweed flavor here?
I think you can get them in like Asian
stores. Korean stores.
Yeah, Korean. Yeah. But then, that took a lot of my luggage space, but it was, it was worth it to get this back.
Exactly.
Anything else?
I think it was really nice to hear the highlights of our trips, and I still have a lot of thoughts about what travel means and what it and all that, but I just like that we're back in the same country and we can see each other now and chat about things.
Amazing. Okay, so that's the end of our episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support us, what we do here at Asian Bitches Down Under, head to Buy Me Coffee page and make a donation for us to continue the intersectionality in the podcast industry. So that's it from us this week. We're finally back and we'll...
And speak to you next week. And where we might touch on the movies we saw while we went overseas. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.